This is a download from the Scottish Railway Preservation Society.
Just putting some lights on the engine now. We've got two lights showing it's a passenger train.
This is Soundworks, the magazine for railway enthusiasts around the world, coming to you from Bowness in Scotland.
Hello and welcome to this edition, the 8th edition of Soundblast, the Scottish Railway Preservation Society's iPod, the totally non-visual magazine. I'm Sandy Simpson. I'm right here in Bowness in central Scotland with the indefatigable David Bytheway, the editor, producer and roving reporter for Soundblast. But here this morning with us is Julia Stephen.
Hello.
Good morning, Julia. I was standing beside the Duke of Sutherland's saloon, which was built in 1899 for that very personage. And I'm going to be very privileged because I'm going to be allowed to see the interior.
Before we go inside, you first need to put on these plastic overshoes.
This is the one size fits none, one is size. It? The one size fits none. Okay, here we go. Oh, glory. Is there anything else I can do when I'm down here? There we are. Okay. And on
now
we go.
Climb in.
My goodness me, the Duke was a fit young man. He got in from a platform, didn't he?
Come through this way and we'll go into the main saloon.
Oh, hold on a moment. It's occupied. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, these are mannequins. It's beautiful.
We've had quite a few people who have been a bit unnerved by these two sitting here.
I'm not surprised. Well, now, do they represent any figures in particular?
I assume they're meant to represent the Duke of Sutherland himself. And they're actually sitting looking at a plan of the carriage itself.
Plan of the carriage. The other man, I suppose, could just about be David Jones, who was a frequent visitor to Dunrobin Castle to discuss railway matters with the Duke.
That's a possibility.
Julia, I think we're standing in what was the dining area of the carriage. Can you describe it to me and its various features?
It's quite a spacious room. It has two doors at either end. So it's sitting roughly in the middle of the carriage. They've got a freestanding table and they've got two sofas sitting in here. They also have electric lighting and electric fans, bell calls for the servants, ashtrays attached to the walls, quite spectacular curtains and matching coverings on the sofas. All in all, it's quite a spacious room for sitting in the middle of a railway carriage.
And that will be the original ceiling, I take it. It was described in its early drawings as having a Lincrusta ceiling. Is that Lincrusta?
I believe that you may be right about that, yes.
What about the black marks on it above the lights?
From what I can gather, I think that the original lighting would have been gas. Certainly, at one point in the carriage further up, there is a sign which describes the electric lighting and how it was put in, I believe, in 1909, so when the carriage was a few years old. So I assume those black patches on the ceiling will be from the original gas lighting.
And a large fan at each end.
I presume they were worried about being too hot as well as being too cold, although that seems strange, but... Yes.
And I take it the round things with handles attached are ventilators?
Yes, I assume so, although they're all sitting at closed at the moment. But yes.
Right. And a temperature, and a thermometer.
In every room there is a thermometer.
Temperature gauge, we're going to say. It's called a thermometer, remember.
Yes.
In every room. Let's go look at another part of it, shall we?
Okay, let's head this way.
Now, what have we here, Julia?
This is one of the two bedrooms which are on the saloon. Quite comfortable looking.
Quite a small bed. Single or double, would you think?
I think you'd be very cosy having two people on that.
I think you might well be right. And...
lots of cupboard space.
And an ensuite.
They've got a sink and a toilet in each one of the two bedrooms, so...
I can tell you a very unexpected little thing. I was in a cafe in Italy in April, and my wife assured me there was a bidet in the ladies' loo in a cafe. They don't have a bidet.
They don't have a bidet in
not
here.
Not next door either.
No, they're two identical bedrooms and en suites.
And I take it to the loo at the time it was fashionable to have penny in the slot to enter the toilets. These toilets were free to the users.
They were free for the users. He'd already paid quite considerably for the...
I see. And again, he has electric lights. He has a bell push. Oh, I like that.
And a light above the bed as
bell
well.
Bell push and a light above the bed, a reading light. And yes, the I'll use it again, the temperature gauge. What was kept up in these little cupboards up there? That kept spare pillows, do you think?
Possibly. Blankets, pillows, or maybe it was some clothing. I'm not quite sure, but there were quite a number of cupboards spaced around.
That's the point. He's not got much hanging space in here, has he?
Hooks, I think, on
just
the walls.
Just hooks. Okay. And there's more, isn't there?
There is, yes.
Right, I'll let you
read. This way.
There we go. Okay.
Come on through this way, and thank we you. Can have a seat in this rather elegant...
Now, this would be, what, the saloon, presumably for day use, primarily?
I would assume so, yeah. Having a second room presumably means he could have meetings and so on the train.
Tell me about lovely table lamp. This is an original feature?
I believe that nearly all of the features on this are actually original. Certainly, if you look at some of the details, you can see that the dates and so on corroborate. Many of them have patent marks and so on, which you can see. Certainly, even the blinds on the windows.
Yes. And the drop lights. Yes, yes. With the leather strap. Yes. It brings back memories, this does. And a leather top to the table, embossed round the edges. Oh, my goodness. We enter heating pipes at the floor along. How it brings back the memories. I never actually travelled in this carriage, but I must have travelled in some rather similar to it. This one was actually built probably 1899 or thereby. It was built for the Duke of Sutherland, who was very interested in railways and had done a great deal of railway development work in the Highlands. He financed quite a lot of the Highland railway system. Whether he was making amends for the acts of his ancestors, who had been largely responsible for the Highland clearances in the northeast of Scotland, who can say? Let us not be uncharitable about his motives. Anyway, he commissioned this carriage from the London North Western Railway at Wolverton, would you believe? And the bodywork is pretty well standard London North Western of the time. It was designed by C.A. Park, who was the London North Western Railway's carriage superintendent, and it was officially described at the time as magnificent. The coach was arranged to be self-contained for day and night use, and it had end balconies, closed end balconies, but there's no corridor connection to link it into another carriage. The likelihood is that the Duke used this carriage, in fact we know he did, we know he used it from time to time to go at least from Dundrobin to Inverness to meet important guests who were coming to stay with him in his castle, and we know one of his guests was King Edward VII, with whom this was a very favourite carriage. That may or may not have had a bearing on the fact that the London North Western Railway built two royal saloons, 3 years after it built this one. And it's widely accepted that Mr. Park regarded this carriage as a prototype for the royal saloons, which they built later. In many respects, they were very similar in style and in finish. One aspect that was fascinating is that the Duke had it painted originally in dark green in the lower panels and with white upper works. And when his fellow directors of the Highland Railway Company saw this splendid livery, they decided that they would paint their principal rolling stock in the same colour scheme, and they started applying white upper works to their carriages. Alas and alack, financial realities then as now soon struck in, and I think they discontinued after about 3 years on grounds of cost. However, it doesn't stop some artists from making probably fairly imaginary pictures of entire Highland trains composed of green and white rolling stock. There's one little story about the Duke.
Stop there.
The Duke also had a locomotive, and he used to drive it himself, I believe, Julia.
Allegedly, he had a train driver on his staff of Dunrobin, and he was meant to be the fireman. But actually, he, I think, drove it himself quite regularly. And as far south as Inverness, he could be pulled by his own locomotive. If he was going further south, he would be hitched onto another train.
There's a story that the Duke was driving the locomotive one day, approaching Bunchrew, I think it was Bunchrew, where the railway crosses the Caledonian Canal. And the swing bridge was open for the canal when chuff, 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 round the corner came Dunrobin with its train, ignoring the signals completely, and made a full emergency stop, fortunately in time. It's said that the signalman went down and marched along the track and delivered himself of a fairly forthright opinion of the driver's skills. And it's also said the Duke took it in good part and accepted he was at fault.
Sounds like a good story there.
Well, Julia, thank you very much for letting me have the privilege of seeing the inside of the vehicle.
You're very welcome.
Given that it's now 110 years old, slightly more than that, I'm sorry to say that public access is not permissible. However, the outside of the carriage is magnificent, and you can see all the features through the windows because it's generally provided with them. And there's a special viewing platform alongside to facilitate this. And David, by the way, found out the story of that platform.
Well, with me now is Alec King, one of the guys who helped make this walkway, but it's got a rather unusual history, hasn't it, Alex?
It certainly has. It came as a kit of parts without any instructions of any description. So it was like a jigsaw puzzle, and once I unravelled the jigsaw puzzle by putting all the like parts together, I then had some unusual sizes of boards. I then discovered that these were in fact steps. So once I discovered that was the steps, I could then proceed, knowing that I had the platform bits, I had the legs, I had now the steps. All I had to do was find out what pieces went where, and it started to unravel itself and become just like a jigsaw. Helped me to put it together after it had been unravelled was Shona and her daughter, Jack, the hubby, Jim Craig, and basically myself. And at one point we got a whole team of people to move the gangway over so it was then central in the position it was meant to be in. And that's basically it.
How long did it take you?
The unravelling actually took longer than the building because, as I say, it came with a jumble mixed up parts of bits of aluminium, bits of boarding, black boarding, aluminium things which turned out to be legs. It's not complete because we couldn't get the length required for the ramp. Inquiries are ongoing into that one.
Okay, Sandy is about to try out your handiwork now. Sandy, over to you.
On the opposite side of the walkway to the Duke of Sutherland's carriage is another recent arrival in Bowness. It's the former Great North of Scotland Railway's Gordon Highlander. And Julia's going to tell me a little bit about it too, I hope.
Yes, it's on loan from Glasgow Museums, and although you can see it from both sides, unlike with Glenn Douglas, we're not actually able to go inside the cab, because on the far side is a tablet-catching mechanism, which is in front of the doorway.
Now, I'm relying very heavily on memory here, so don't quote me. If I'm wrong, phone up David, by the way, and tell him. I think the tablet-catching mechanism was designed by James Manson of the Great North of Scotland Railway, who was concerned about the number of injuries to signalmen and to firemen over when manual tablet catching was being done, and he designed this mechanical catcher, which, unlike many people today, he did not patent, so that it could be freely used by other railway companies.
That sounds about right.
Okay, and further along again, we have yet another recent arrival, and this is the Midland Railway's compound locomotive number 1000. Julia, why is this here?
This is again on loan from the National Railway Museum in York, and it's quite a contrast to Gordon Highlander, red on one side and green on the other, so it's looking quite spectacular here. The Midland Railway Company also came up to Scotland as well, so they would have been sights common on Scottish railways as well.
I remember sisters of this locomotive at Perth, because some were continued to be built by the LMS in the immediate years after the Big Four were created, and Perth had 923, 938, 939 that I remember, and I suspect it had one or two more as well.
You know, you can't leave Sandy alone for 5 minutes without him talking to somebody. Sandy, who have you got this time?
One of the museum curators here in Bowness is David Crombie. And David served his apprenticeship at Inverurie Works and actually worked on Gordon Highlander.
Yes, I worked in Gordon Highlander between 1953 and 58 at various times. And I can remember fitting the new cylinder block to it in 1956, I think it was.
Can you set the valves on steam engines nicely?
Well, I did valve setting as part of my apprenticeship.
I think you might be in demand in the steam locomotive workshops.
I think I'm getting a bit out of date now.
The steam locomotives are like us, they're both getting older, David.
Yes, I know.
Tell me about Gordon. This is a superheated one, you said.
Yeah, the difference with the superheated ones is that the slide valves are above the pistons.
Uh-huh.
And the saturated ones, they are between the pistons.
Right.
That's the difference between them. And also the superheating, of course, is different. There was only one Great North that was totally different, was Hatton Castle. It didn't have a Westinghouse pump, latterly. It was only one without a Westinghouse pump.
And what difference does superheating make?
Well, you get more work out of the steam. You don't burn so much coal.
Were they more complicated to maintain?
No.
So it was win-win?
Yeah, the superheated came in around about the 1920s in all locomotives. And due to the huge reduction in consumption, especially in Edinburgh-London run, paid for itself many times over.
And, of course, it would make possible the non-stop running between Edinburgh and London.
Yeah.
To a considerable extent.
Coal-wise.
Yes,
you wouldn't need. You wouldn't probably do it without superheating, no.
David, thank you very much indeed. That was very kind. And that pretty well wraps up this edition of Sound Blast. You can contact us online at www.srps.org.uk/soundblast. That's all lowercase. That's www.srps.org.uk/soundblast. Or you can write to us at soundblast, two words this time with initial capitals, soundblast, SRPS, Union Street, Bowness, West Lothian, EH519AQ, Scotland. The editor and producer has been David, by the way, and I'm Sandy Simpson.
And I'm Julia Stephen.
And we wish you all that you wish yourself from everyone here at the Scottish Railway Preservation Society at Bowness in Scotland.